Finance and Government Operations Committee is called to order. Is there someone that would like to move the minutes? Representative Freiberg.
I will move the minutes.
Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor of approving the minutes? Aye.
Recording in progress.
All opposed, nay. Minutes are approved. And our first bill is House File 1532. I see the author approaching the testifier's table. You proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 1532 is a bill that only increases the state's reimbursement ability for the purpose of an appraisal in the event of eminent domain. Real quick look at a Redfin article says that a typical home appraisal can range between $200 to $600 and up to $2,000 for larger homes. So if the purpose of this underlying bill is to fully reimburse an individual property owner's appraisal costs, we need to ensure that we widen the mark enough to ensure that their house is reimbursed. So a quick historical way of this, if a city or a township, someone is going to take possession of your personal property via eminent domain, the way it works is that the state or the entity taking it will provide an assessment of what they believe the value of it is, and then you also have a right to go out and provide get a second opinion from an individual of your choice, and then that is, according to current law, it is reimbursable up to $1,500 for a single family or up to $5,000 for something larger than a single family. That's current law now. But if a quick look at a Redfin article that was published in February of 2025 states that an appraisal could be up to $2,000 for a single family home, we need to ensure that as a state we are taking care of people as we're looking at taking their property away from them forcibly. And so that's the entirety of the bill, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your time.
Any questions or discussion? Okay. I will move that House File 1532 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the General Registry. Seeing no questions, all in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. And the motion passes, and thank you, Mr. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee.
Next would be House File 1290. I see the author approaching the testifier's table. Please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Chair and members. I am presenting today House File 1290, and it's a straightforward bipartisan bill that improves public access to life-saving automatic external defibrillators, AEDs, by authorizing roadside signage to guide people to registered outdoor public access to AED locations. You will see that there is a fiscal note, but even with the fiscal note, the cost will be covered by the participants that will have the AED locations at their place. Minnesota Department of Transportation, MnDOT, will develop a standardized AED sign for general use. MnDOT may update the Minnesota Manual on Uniform Traffic Control Devices to integrate these signs into official roadway guidance. That's pretty much the what of the bill, and now I'll turn it over to my two testifiers that are online.
Before we take them, I'm going to move that House File 1290 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. And now we can move on to the testifiers. First would be Rich Fennis, and please give your name and begin your testimony.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Rich Fennis. I am the founder of a 501c3 nonprofit Minnesota corporation called Advocate for Health. The mission for Advocates for Health is to bring public access defibrillation to communities by installing outdoor AED smart monitored cabinets that are accessible to the public 24/7. Our vision is to bridge the gap between a sudden cardiac arrest occurring and when EMS arrives to help the person that had the sudden cardiac arrest. Our goal is to accomplish this by implementing a public access defibrillation program of awareness, access, action, and assurance. Assurance being to make sure that the AED unit inside our cabinet is working. I mention that only because up to 25% of the AEDs in the United States don't work because they've got expired pads or batteries. I want to mention or clarify the difference between a sudden cardiac arrest and a heart attack. A heart attack is basically a plumbing problem. You have blockage of the artery. Your chances of surviving a heart attack are up to 90%. In the case of a sudden cardiac arrest, it's an electrical problem, much like your iPhone freezing up. If you don't have a relatively immediate access to CPR and an AED, your chance of surviving a sudden cardiac arrest are less than 5%. If you have CPR and AED to shock you back into rhythm, your chances go from 5% survival to 75% to 80%. Why are automatic external defibrillator wayfinding signs needed? Basically, AEDs are hidden from the public. If you ask a group of people where's the nearest AED, they're likely not to know where it is. What we're trying to do is make our AED smart monitored cabinets that have the AEDs inside them readily available. The first 4 minutes of a sudden cardiac arrest are very critical. After 4 minutes, your chances of survival get reduced by 10% per minute. The average response time by EMS in the United States is 12 to 15 minutes, to give you an idea of a comparison. Right now, we have our directional signs in place with cities, counties, and townships throughout Minnesota. In all cases, really, they are very much in support of having directional signs because they're part of the, we call it top-of-the-mind awareness. Okay, where are these? A lot of times they might be installed on a building, as in the case of the fire hall in Cold Spring, the fire hall police station, which is roughly about three blocks away from the junction of Highway 23 and Red River Avenue. One of the things that I have some concerns about, well, first of all, I just want to clarify, even with the great support that we have now with counties, townships, and cities, they represent a small portion of the traveling public as it relates to state and interstate highways. State and interstate highways nationally represent a little over 20% of the highways, yet over 72% of the people that are in the United States. And so you have a huge disparity between a knowledge gap, for lack of a better term, of people that are traveling these roadways but have no idea where a life-saving AED would be. Some of my concerns regarding the fiscal notes from MnDOT include first of all, I'd just like to mention, I've got 40 years of experience working with departments of transportation throughout the United States administering logo sign programs. These are the blue gas, food, lodging, and camping signs on the interstate that have McDonald's and Burger King and KOA campgrounds as an example. And in a lot of cases, when you put a logo sign on the interstate, it requires potentially a ramp directional sign or a wayfinding sign if the business isn't readily visible from the interstate or from the stop sign at the top of the exit. on the fiscal notes that MnDOT supplied, they are saying that they are figuring that we need an average of 6 signs per location, AED location. I'm not quite sure where they got that information, but again, using the example of Cold Spring Highway 23 and Red River Avenue, there are existing directional signs across from the police fire station. And so 2 signs, one each direction on Highway 23 would be more than adequate. In fact, I see that being more the norm than the average of 6. In the fiscal notes, MnDOT...
Mr. Finnice?
Yes.
The Ways and Means Committee will be addressing the fiscal note. It's nice that you give us an idea of some of the components there, but if you can get back to the bill itself, that's more the purview of this committee.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The issue really is one of making the traveling public readily available aware of where the location of AEDs are so that we can together work to save lives. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Finnice. The next would be Joel Vogel. Please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Hello, my name is Joel Vogel, and I'm Program Director for Advocates for Health. I do want to thank you, Mr. Chair, and other representatives, especially Representative Perryman and Hewitt, for sponsoring this bill. It's near and dear to my heart because 21 years ago I did have a heart attack, and I did survive based on everything was in place and people were able to find the things they needed to find at that time. Mr. Finnice did a good job of explaining why it is needed in terms of the number of deaths per year. And he talked about a heart stopping with sudden cardiac arrest and also a heart attack. However, there are other times when the heart stops and an AED is needed. One of those main events is a drowning. Another time is an electrocution. And sadly enough, in talking to a lot of the police officials that we meet throughout the state, drug overdoses are becoming more and more common as a reason for the use of a AED. In the town I live in St. Joseph, Minnesota, there is over 42 AEDs located in the town. You're able to find that by using an app called Pulse Point, which is free to anybody on your phone. And of those 42 AEDs, nobody knows where they are. However, I should say of those 42, they don't know where most of them are. They do know where 14 of them are, because we do have signage up in the town of St. Joe that actually shows directions as to where they're located. And as we're around the state of Minnesota, we've got over 301 outdoor AED cabinets currently, and we're in 5 states with the majority of them being in the state of Minnesota. We hear comments all the time of people saying, we see your cabinets all over the place. In the Minneapolis area, there isn't as many, but we're working on changing that as well. My testimony would be that we do need signage so people can see them, so they can get to them quickly, and they can grab one and go and assist, and by the Good Samaritan law, know that they're able to do that with any repercussions. So once again, I thank Representative Hewitt and Perryman for bringing this forward, and I urge you to support this bill and look forward to it moving forward.
Thank you, Mr. Vogel. Any questions or comment? Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Finnice's testimony just got me wondering, maybe this is a question for the bill author, maybe for the sergeant's office, I don't know, but where is the closest AED to this hearing room?
Without a sign, I don't know.
Okay. All right.
I'm sorry.
Good answer, Representative
Perryman.
Yeah.
Representative?
I'll, Mr. Chair, I'll do my own research and figure it out in case it's ever necessary, which hopefully it's not for anybody at this in this room or in this building.
Mr. Freiberg, or Representative Freiberg, I think we've all noticed as we've gone by, but there's so many things that we've seen, but when we need them, we think, where was that? And I'm glad that we're looking at trying to help, because my wife's pager would go off at night as a first responder in a rural area, and she had minutes to get there. And minutes matter. So Representative McDonald had a question.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Yeah, question, curious to know if with the sign, is there also an app, if you will, similar to like a Tesla app where you find out where the charging station is. So is there that kind of technology out there? Not necessarily the state sponsored, but is that technology out there?
Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, I'm going to refer that to one of my testifiers. I think one of them did refer to an app on the phone.
Would that be Mr. Vogel?
I thought it was Mr. Vogel.
Mr. Vogel.
Yes, thank you. There is an app available. It's called PulsePoint. And we're in the process of working with them. Whenever we install an AED or find an AED, we actually put it on their app, and then you're able to find where all the AEDs are, whether they're inside or outside. There is a cost to that app, and it's interesting, though, that app, in working with them, they're a nonprofit out of California. If you're a 911 call center and things, that's what they go by, and that's where the investment is. I can't speak specifically to their cost, but I'll give you a general idea. I just talked to a sheriff 911 dispatcher up in the Alexandria area, and an investment to cover the whole county and their whole area was only $8,000 per year. So if you took the number of 911 call centers there are, and it goes by sizes and things like that, it wouldn't be a lot for the state of Minnesota to pay for that. Right now, the counties are all paying for that separately. So an $8,000 figure in Stearns County would cover all the 911 calls that come into them. Whenever I go on vacation, I go to the 911, go to the PulsePoint app, and I look, and I see where I'm at, and I'm able to find the closest AED to me if it's in the if it's in that PulsePoint app.
Thank you, Mr. Vogel. And if you can pass on that information to the author, that might be useful at the next at the Ways and Means and Committee. Was there an additional question, Representative McDonald?
Yeah, thank you. Representative Davis and I just pulled it up, just wondering if this was correct. Pulse Point Respond is if the testifier can testify to the legitimacy of that particular site called.
Mr. Vogel.
Pulse Point Respond.
Mr. Chair, the answer is there's two Pulse Point apps. I have an Apple phone, so I'm not sure. There's one that's an orange app and one that isn't. And as I pull it up on my phone here real quick, it says Pulse Point. There's one. I think it sometimes lists as the second or third one down. And what you'll see is that area. To help you get exactly where it was at, if you downloaded that app, and you went to the town of St. Joseph, Minnesota, it's showing 42 AEDs in that area. And then there's a sign that shows it. You can zero in on it, press on the app, and then it actually shows you where it is and tells you where the AED is located in that city, in that location. What we do is this is extremely helpful to us because we can look at a certain town in a certain area and see that there's no AEDs, and we're able to go in and talk to them and help them start a campaign so that they can get AEDs up and available for the public.
Thank you,
Representative
McDonald.
Yeah, lastly, Mr. Chair, sorry to go off-road on this subject. I'm sure we want to move on. But Representative Perryman, just in my notes, I see that an estimated annual cost of $4,000 per sign, is that just that seems awfully high, and why was it necessary to be an annual cost? I don't see it in the bill language per se, and I know it's not our jurisdiction, Mr. Chair. But nevertheless, it's kind of in our jurisdiction because we've got to vote on the signage, which I will be doing. But just curious as to that, if the...
Well, and to the author, I think you hinted at there's some disagreement as to what it might actually be.
Mr. Chair, Representative McDowell, you're correct. There is work still being finished. The $4,000 came from MnDOT originally, and we're still working on it. As one of the testifiers said, they are estimating 6 signs per spot. We don't, that's a little overdoing it. Plus, you can also put these signs on current structures under signs. So it's work we're working on. But one thing as a takeaway from the fiscal note is the cost, even though it is high at $4,000, the cost will be covered by the individual who has the AED at their place of business.
Thank you. Representative McDonald.
Yeah, that's all, Mr. Chair. Well, I can see why it costs. The estimate is from MnDOT. There's probably 7 guys that'll put that sign in, and that's why it's so expensive. But otherwise, MnDOT does a great job.
Well, thank you, Representative McDonald. Not being in our jurisdiction, the chair is not totally familiar with the details on that. Any other comments, questions? Well, then I will renew my motion that House File 1292 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion passes, and you're on your way.
Thank you so much. It is a great bill, bipartisan, and it will save lives. So thank you for hearing me today. Have a great day.
Thank you. Next will be House File 2231, and with the author... come to the testifier table, and if the testifiers could start queuing up Tori Key and Jason Widell would be the first two. And please introduce yourself and begin with your introduction of the bill.
Thank you, Chair Quam, and members for hearing this bill today. So the bill before you today is a continuation from last legislative session. If you remember last year, there were several newspapers who ended their publication, which affected many local units of government who use the newspaper for public notification. So due to the lateness of last session, an amendment was offered to address the situation, which passed on the House floor but didn't make it into the omnibus bill. And the amendment last year was work done in collaboration with several people. It was Representative Nash, Representative Cleburne, Representative Tapke, and along with the Association of Minnesota Counties and the Newspaper Association. So what you have before you today is the continuation, is a bill to allow local units of government to use their website in the event a newspaper closure until another qualified newspaper is found. And today's bill was worked on together, again, with Representative Nash, Cleburne, Tapke, the Association of Minnesota Counties, Townships, League of Minnesota Cities, and the Newspaper Association. So with that, we have a number of testifiers that we could go ahead and hear from. Thank you.
Thank you to the author. I will move that House File 2231 be recommended to pass and be referred to the General Registry. And Ms. Key, introduce yourself and please testify.
Thank you so much, Chair and Committee. My name is Tori Key and I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. We're extremely thankful for Representative Harder for bringing HF 2231, which, as she described, would allow a city whose newspaper has closed to publish their required notices on the city's website until another qualified newspaper is identified. Over the last years, also, as Representative Harder stated, many newspapers have closed across the state, leaving cities scrambling to find a solution for publishing their required notices. Cities are committed to keeping their residents informed, but with these closures, they are forced to publish their notices in neighboring newspapers that might not have any subscribers or very few subscribers in their actual city. Many cities are concerned with continuing to be compliant with the requirements and reach their residents. cities are required to publish notifications on everything from special council meetings if something needs to be rescheduled to council minutes, ordinances, requests for advertisements for bids. And cities have started to utilize their websites in addition to the traditional newspaper requirements. Allowing cities to publish online or in new technology will allow a new channel for publishing notices that balances the needs of a city and is the best use of tax dollars. HF 2231 would give cities the opportunity to publish notices for on their websites and for free on the Newspaper Association's public notice website while they research and identify a newspaper that fits the needs of their community. We appreciate your consideration of the bill, which is a great step forward towards modernizing newspaper publication requirements. Thank you.
Thank you. And the next testifier would be Jason Waddell. And then after that is Laura Oaksvad. And I am sure I botched that. Please introduce yourself and start your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jason Waddell, and I'm the city manager for the city of Prior Lake. I'm testifying today on behalf of the Scott County Association for Leadership and Efficiency, or SCALE. SCALE is made up of 8 cities, 10 townships, 8 school districts, and the county itself within Scott County. We are in support of this bill, and we want to thank the authors, Representative Harder and Nash, Clevehorn, Tabke, Scott, Bakeberg, Hansen, and Elkins. A little over a year ago, we lost our local newspaper in Prior Lake. It was the Prior Lake American. To meet our statutory requirements, we had to find an alternative to publish our public notices. The only options we had were either the Star Tribune or the Pioneer Press. The circulation of the Star Tribune in Prior Lake reaches less than 3% of our homes, and the Pioneer Press was even fewer. We therefore chose the Star Tribune, and over the last 12 months, we have spent over $10,000 on publishing our public notices, which is more than double what we had historically paid. But however, more important than the cost really is the fact that 97% of our residents are not receiving these notices. This is not how transparency in government is supposed to work. We are publicizing our notices in a newspaper the vast majority of our residents don't receive simply so we can check the box that says we met our statutory obligations and nothing more. The underlying reason why we publicize these notices is not being met. We've taken it upon ourselves to identify alternative methods for notifying the public of our notices. This includes simultaneously publishing them on our website, and we actually have a new online local newspaper called the Prior Lake News Compass. The views of our public notices on these online methods is reaching far greater number of our residences. Our residents go online every day when they're looking for information on what is happening at the city. Our city Facebook page has over 10,000 followers, and this is representative of the day and age that we are living in. If the goal of public notices is to provide transparency and inform our citizens of what is happening in their government, then we need to publicize our notices where they will actually see them. So we thank you for your support of this bill.
Thank you. And Laura, please introduce yourself and inform me of the correct pronunciation and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Quam and members of the committee. My name is Laura Oxnavad. I am a school board member at St. Anthony New Brighton and chair of AMSD. I originally signed up to testify because of the posting on the committee website had a delete all amendment, and so that is what I am testifying in support of. I do hope that this will move forward, and I can tell you a little bit about why this would help our district. House File 2231, the Delete All Amendment, is a common-sense, zero-cost policy change that provides local control and flexibility to school districts across Minnesota. This amendment allows school boards to publish their meeting minutes either in their local newspaper or their official district website, a practical update that benefits both schools and taxpayers. The bill as it stands does not help our district or many throughout the state. We greatly value our partnership with our local newspaper, but in St. Anthony, New Brighton, there is only one newspaper, which is published every 2 weeks, and it reaches only a small portion of our district's homes. No single newspaper serves our entire district, such as the previous testifier said, the Star Tribune is delivered to a small fraction of our homes. A recent survey conducted during our 2023 local referendum asked residents, what is your principal source of information about the school district? The results were clear. Only 4% rely on newspapers, 13% use our website, and 29% turn to our district newsletter. This data highlights the undeniable reality. Newspapers are no longer the primary way our communities stay informed. Yet our district pays over $1,000 a month, money that our already stretched general fund, money that comes from our already stretched general fund, to publish summary minutes in a newspaper that only reaches a fraction of our residents. These funds would be far better spent on critical underfunded programs that directly benefit students. Posting meeting minutes on the district website ensures broader, more reliable access for all residents in a timelier and more comprehensive manner. Furthermore, many newspapers across the state only serve a limited portion of school district residents. Some districts are forced to publish in newspapers their constituents don't even read. This amendment gives districts the flexibility to choose the most effective and fiscally responsible way to communicate with their communities. This is the right time to modernize outdated publication requirements. MSBA and AMSD fully support this measure, and the Delete All Amendment would provide the flexibility school districts need, while at the same time partnering with the Minnesota Newspaper Association's statewide public notice website to inform the public of the chosen public notice location. So as long as the annual publishing of the Minnesota Newspaper Association's statewide public notice website is not an added cost to school districts, it has the potential for positive impact for schools. So I urge you to support the amendment as a simple, zero-cost, common-sense reform that will benefit all Minnesota school districts. Thank you for Representative Harder and for the committee. I appreciate your time.
Thank you. And Matt Hilgard, please step forward. I would let the testifier and the committee know school districts I'm used to don't do an or, they do an and. Local paper, website, and posted at every school site at the entrance. So it's a very inclusive thing that seems to work for us. And I see that you're ready to testify. Please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Matt Hilgart. I work for the Association of Minnesota Counties. AMC represents all of Minnesota's 87 counties. And I also want to start off by thanking Representative Harder, as well as the other stakeholders that we've worked with on the underlying bill. Those stakeholders include the League of Minnesota Cities and the Minnesota Newspaper Association alongside the author. Since the amendment was offered, I think it does beg some clarification. It feels as though some of the discussion is on two related but also unrelated issues. The underlying bill is kind of what happens when there is no qualified newspaper, which is a smaller subset of an issue. The amendment, which is not an AMC amendment, talks about basically an ability to publish in a paper or not, and in place, just publish online. AMC is testifying today in support of that underlying bill, which is negotiations that have been worked on with the Minnesota Newspaper Association and stakeholders throughout the entire fall. In fact, I think we met for coffee in September and then again in October and January with the Minnesota Newspapers Association to get through. Even though it's only a 1.5-page bill, there were a lot of questions. What does a qualified newspaper mean? Are we okay with some of the vagueness of some of the terminology, which can work both ways for flexibility for local governments and the newspaper association? But I want to appreciate, one, their collaboration, and secondly, some attention that we paid in this bill. As Ms. Key alluded to, here we are providing for that flexibility for a local community to not have to post in a paper if there is no qualified newspaper for an undetermined amount of time until basically there is another qualified newspaper. That's a tremendous amount of flexibility. The second thing we're also saying is that we do have an obligation for that government transparency, and we'll be posting on MNA's website. But they've made clear here that it's at no additional cost to the local government. So we're not going to be doing another posting fee just to put it on their news site, which we appreciate. So in closing, we very much appreciate this. This does target a small issue, but a very important issue, which is when a qualified newspaper disappears in a community and the flexibilities that we as local governments can have. And we appreciate all the stakeholders' involvement along with the author on this bill.
Thank you. Next testifier is Graham Berg-Moberg.
Hello, Mr. Chair.
Introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
My name is Graham Berg-Moberg. I'm with the Minnesota Association of Townships. I'd like to thank Representative Harder for her work on this bill. Just briefly, in general, we are similarly situated and share the comments of most of our local government partners here. At the end of the day, many of our residents and many of our members are dealing with the fact that print culture has sort of changed over time, and residents look first and foremost to the internet for most of their news in most of these places. As a result, in cases where newspapers have disappeared, it can be quite difficult. So we are testifying in support. We do support the underlying bill here, and we appreciate Representative Harder's efforts on the matter.
Thank you. Next would be Mark Anfinson. And the last testifier I have on the list is Chris Schultz.
Hi.
Please introduce yourself. Begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mark Anfinson, attorney for the Minnesota Newspaper Association. I was prepared to try and inject just a slight bit of humor as I started my testimony by saying this was going to be brief. And then the prior testifier made me look foolish if I said that, so I'm not going to say that. It's still quite short. So I will focus on the bill. I understand the delete all amendment is not before the committee, that my remarks are on the bill, which is a carefully designed effort to address a specific and relatively narrow issue with public notice in Minnesota, as prior testifiers have said. That focus on that bill is the product, as both Representative Harder and Mr. Hilgard have outlined, of lengthy discussions to try and get this as good as we can make it. And legislation is an art. As you all know, we can't ever be perfect, but I think we did pretty well with this. And the bill is a product of something MNA has long been committed to, which is engaging with local governments in particular to solve public notice problems. I have been doing this work for more than 30 years. And over that period of time, we have either repealed or modified scores and scores of public notices in response to concerns raised by local governments. And so it's a good process. It's worked well. And we very much appreciate Representative Harder's efforts on this chapter of that process. The virtue of her bill is that it gives local governments an option to disseminate public notices when a local newspaper closes. But in saying that, I want to emphasize this doesn't happen very often. Some of the government testifiers you heard are a little bit fast and loose with their facts about newspapers and their survivability and their readership and things like that. I would hope the committee, before it adopts broader, far-reaching public notice reform, does a deep dive into the actual facts with the newspaper industry in Minnesota and the readership of public notice. I will assure you, from our perspective and based on our experience, it's quite different than some of the things you've heard today. Now, we do, again, understand the concerns of local governments. They're very legitimate. We will never disparage them or suggest they're not well-founded. They need to get the notice out, and they're concerned about the cost. But I will say in passing, having done this for more than 30 years, for long before the internet ever arrived in our culture and impacted newspapers and readership patterns, many local governments were simply trying to cut this relatively minuscule portion of their budget for disseminating information to their constituents about what they did with public tax dollars. And that's, after all, the goal of public notice. There are 250 newspapers in Minnesota still actively publishing. Our surveys, which are potentially as biased as government surveys, show something quite different than they do, surprisingly. We have surveys that show that 86% of adults in Minnesota regularly look at print and digital newspapers. And I emphasize in saying digital, much of the testimony you heard here briefly was along the lines of nobody reads print publications anymore. Every newspaper in the state has a very active and engaging website. And so all of the information that's in the print edition will be on the online version, easily accessible. And if all these people are reading online now as opposed to print, they're probably reading this on the newspaper's website, which is identified in most communities as the go-to site for local news. So I just want to conclude briefly here by addressing a couple of the comments that some of the prior testifiers made. Again, I'm not going to deal with the delete all. That's off the table. But, for example, the gentleman from Prior Lake said that 3%, the Star Tribune, which they published their public notices and only has 3% of the residents of Prior Lake in their circulation. The Star Tribune's circulation in Scott County is 64,000. I question whether of that large number, there's only 3% of the residents in Prior Lake, which is a pretty good chunk of Scott County, are getting the Star Tribune, either online or in print. And again, if you just look at the print subscription, you get a very distorted view because the Star Tribune's online edition is heavily read by almost everybody in the state. He also said something to the effect that 97% of residents in Prior Lake don't receive the Star Tribune. Maybe they don't in a print subscription, but I'll bet a lot more of them read the online edition. And online public notices are very accessible. I don't mean to disparage government websites. They're wonderful. I use them myself a lot. But I would be willing to put up a fair amount of money challenging any school district in the state to demonstrate that more people look at public notices on a school district website than on a newspaper website. I just don't think you use government websites like that. So I won't belabor this. Again, the bill is an excellent example of what can happen with problems that local governments have and identify when we work together to solve them. And we will, this is just a one more stop on that journey. We'll continue to do that, and we're more than happy to do that upon request. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you to the testifier and to the people that are in the audience and watching. The committee is not promoting any wagering on any of the issues that are before us.
That's for a different committee, right, Mr. Chair?
And Mr. Schultz, please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Okay. Chair and members of the committee, I'm Chris Schultz, owner of Herald Journal Publishing and Greater Minnesota Communications. We're based out of Winston, Minnesota. We publish 5 community newspapers that serve 21 communities, 10 school districts, 3 counties, and multiple townships. Basically from Delano, Loretto, Maple Plain to Green Isle, Broughton, and Stewart. So a good share of just west of the Twin Cities. In Sibley, some in Carver, McLeod, and Meeker counties. Public notice, like Mark, I've been at this for 30-some years, and I'm a local owner, not a national group anywhere. Public notice works by putting that important information in a place people are likely to see it. And in my testimony, I was going to repeat that several times, but I'm not going to. So all of you understand, when we get that public notice, we put it a note on the front page of our newspapers. We put it in our electronic newsletters, and we put it on our websites routinely. A concern I have when I read the amendment was there was no oversight. There are times we have to specifically talk to public bodies to make sure that notice is going to be published, that it's required. And we do that, and we do it significantly, and we work hard at it. To be honest with all of you, I take great pride in that responsibility, without question. and we do. I want to thank Representative Harder for her bill. I significantly support it, and my entire staff significantly supports it. I'm going to finish with one simple note. I've got 110 employees across rural Minnesota. We surveyed our entire staff. When they go to a public body's website, especially a city's, guess what they, and one simple thing they look for on a routine basis when they go to the site. Because we publish and produce city websites and township websites. They look for, when is the brush site going to be open? You guys know what a brush site is? Where are you going to take your branches, your leaves? It was the one reason they went to the city's website. When is that location in the city that they can bring their garbage to open? Are they going there to look for meeting minutes and important information? No. They're going to a community newspaper. I completely understand the closures we've had in the industry, but Representative Harder's bill addresses that because we want the public to be informed. And you're talking to the guy who pays the bills, okay, and all the taxes that are associated with it. But myself, my family, our entire staff, that's our heart and soul. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else from the audience wishing to testify?
Thank you very much.
Seeing none, Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm kind of confused. There's been some discussion about the amendment. There was testimony to it, but then there were some comments from testifiers about how it's off the table now. I don't believe it's from anybody on my side of the aisle. Is somebody going to be offering the amendment?
Representative Freiberg, is there anyone from your side of the aisle that is wishes to offer the amendment?
Would you like me to?
What happened was after the final session last week, in the chamber, the author approached me asking if I'd seen any amendment language, because the author hadn't seen it. And, it wasn't passed on to any of our members, so none of us are familiar enough to bring it forward. But if your members are familiar with it, then you can bring it forward and explain it in detail and take questions. Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know that I will necessarily, kind of for similar reasons. I mean, I'm not sure this is perfect language, but I'm not sure it's not perfect language. I mean, I was kind of looking forward to the discussion on it, to be frank. I do think this is an area where, I mean, I appreciate Representative Harder's bill. I certainly plan to support it. I do think it addresses a need that's there, but I just sort of feel like this is an area that's been around the legislature probably as long as you and I have both been in this body, Mr. Chair. And I was a little put off by the last couple of testifiers here. I mean, you know, it seemed like they were kind of disparaging city and school district websites, which I don't think is necessary. I do think there is a place for those. I think the information could be put on there. I think a lot of people do know where to look for information and can find it. And I think as a legislature, we could put requirements in place on the cities and counties saying what type of information needs to be on their website to meet the public notice requirement, how prominent it should be placed to make sure it gets located on there. So, I'd kind of like to see, I'd kind of like to see the Harder bill go a little further than it does. I don't know whether the language in the DE amendment is perfect, so I'm not sure I'm comfortable offering it and speaking to it, as you said. But I would kind of like to see it. And also just to the last couple testifiers, I mean, you know, I heard an argument from Mr. Anfinson that everyone reads newspapers' websites, and to me that says they have the technology necessary to access a city or county website to get this notice. I mean, I just, to me, you know, the school board member Oxavad's testimony was fairly compelling that it is a big expense for cities and counties that I don't know is fully appreciated by the people who advocate for maintaining the status quo. So, like I said, I'm a yes on the underlying bill. I was kind of looking forward to what the discussion on the DE amendment would have been, but I'll just leave it at that for the moment.
Thank you, Mr. Freiberg, or Representative Freiberg. The schools I'm used to have for decades done the paper, their website, all their school sites, because we realized, again, decades ago, that you use all the local available ways of communicating, because there are some people that you know, use one, don't use another, and et cetera. And especially with, you know, posting it on all of your building entrances, you know, that's another level for the people that, you know, interact with. So, yeah, it would be nice if there was a, but we don't have a person that seems to be familiar with it. Representative McDonald.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Representative Harder, thanks for bringing the bill forward. I'm glad that the DE1 or the D1 was not introduced. I wouldn't have supported that personally. I think this is a good bill that you've worked hard on with the newspaper folks and the parties and interested. I personally, although I'm not an old McDonald, I do like to read the newspaper from the Delano Herald Journal, who are always so kind to me for some reason when they report some of my updates and then business-wise. But the local newspapers are very important, especially in rural Minnesota. They cover the sports and schools. That's a big thing. So for that, the schools, I'm sure, are appreciative. It's a very small amount. $1,000 a month is nothing. There's other mandates that the state can certainly do to release unfunded mandates to the school that is a lot costlier, in my opinion. And the local newspapers, as you heard from our folks that are local businesses, family businesses, that put out the local fish fries, that we are probably looking at the newspapers as to when the next one is, but also school sports and businesses advertising there, the local news is very important. You know, when you deal with, I'm just going to say this publicly, but in as far as schools and cities and counties, it's all taxpayer dollars, and they need to be fiduciary responsible for those taxpayer dollars. But again, they are taxpayer dollars. Going to a newspaper to publish a very important public announcements that not everybody sees on the internet. I'm very attuned to the internet and my phone and iPad and everything else that I want to watch the news, but I like the old good old-fashioned newspaper, and so do hundreds of people that I know in my district, if not thousands, actually. But they're local family businesses that need that reporting, that by state statute, but also a little financial responsibility to keep our newspapers afloat and keep them profitable and around and not closing out businesses and shutting down the newspapers. So I support your bill. I think it's very important for those who are concerned that to save some money for the school districts. They are reporting the news, and many people are seeing them in the newspaper. It's important information. Representative Freiberg, I'm glad that you're supporting this bill as well. It's a bipartisan bill. I just wanted to give a plug for, A, our local newspapers. I think they do a great job. I'm kind of biased to Mr. Schultz, who was up here our last testifier. Does a great job with the Herald Journal, both in Delano and Winston and Watertown, my hometown, and many others do a great job, Mr. Schultz. So does his newspaper reporter, Robert Hopwood. But it's very important to keep them viable and alive. And if school districts want to save some money, $1,000 a month, I'm sure they'll find many other applications to save those, and I'd be happy to help you with that, but not in this case. This is a great compromise that schools, if there's no local newspaper, they don't have to, you know, spend that money in a neighboring town, you know, miles away, if not tens of, you know, many miles away. So I had no question, Representative Harder, just a comment of supporting the bill and giving a plug for our good old local newspapers who do, in my opinion, a great job, at least in my district, and I think many of yours as well. Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative McDonald. And you forgot to mention that this has been a years-long bipartisan effort on the current bill language. Representative Coulter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, Representative Donald McDonald, I am furious that you thought of that old McDonald joke before I did. So we'll start there. But Representative Hunter, thank you. This is one of those years-long thorny issues that someone really just needs to take on. And so I'm really, really grateful that you have done that and done good work. And I'm going to support the bill as well. But I do think this is a conversation that we need to keep having. And I want to elevate, because I think a lot of this conversation does center around Greater Minnesota and small-town newspapers. But I want to elevate what Mr. Waddell said about those of us in the metro area who, when, you know, if the Bloomington Sun Current, for example, ever stopped circulation, we would have to publish, the city of Bloomington would have to publish our public notices in the Star Tribune as well. And that would be a much more significant cost to the city of Bloomington that the city of Bloomington would be required to do under state law. So I think this is, you know, this is a good bill to move forward. I just want to make sure that we continue to have the conversation about best meeting these needs. So thank you again.
Thank you. And Representative Vernick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Harder. I do also support your bill. Would have loved to have more conversation around the DE. I do support my local newspaper, The Sun, this week. They recently went to a paid subscription. We're one of the few people that I know that actually pays to have the paper come to us. And they did reach out to me. And I'm going to tell you, I do not look at the newspaper for the public notices, okay? Like, just so we're clear, like, that's not my primary thing. I know some people look at it for the obituaries, and that's a whole nother conversation about how expensive those have become as of late. But it is a subscription service, and I did ask, so, you know, hey, now we've narrowed down who gets that paper. And they said, well, we post it publicly. And I said, so what's the difference if you post it publicly or the entity does? And whether that's the city, the county, or the school district, I guess I don't see a big difference there. With that, I will just like to comment on something that you said, Chair Quam, about posting both online in the paper and at every entrance. I represent a school district that has 40-some-odd buildings. Mm-hmm. So posting at 40-some-odd buildings with such frequency, I think the signs would become white noise and they wouldn't really be noticed. And operationally, I think that's a little bit harder with such a large district. So just the miles to drive to every space or organizing and having an admin do that would be a little challenging. But I do appreciate you working on it. I remember this bill last year, and so hopefully it doesn't get dropped along the way and can make it across the finish line. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative. And in our small community and small school districts, we actually have somebody at the office next to the entrance in every building that any adult, you know, that isn't a normal staff member, et cetera, would go through to sign in. And that person usually is used to putting up, you know, notifications and, hey, there's a special pep fest, you know, those type of things on a pretty regular basis. So we don't have people that drive to all the locations. We have actual people at each location, so that's why it works for us. I don't see any other. Are there any other questions? A closing statement by the author.
Yes. Thank you, Chair Quam, and members again for listening to this bill. I appreciate all your comments and input. I am one of those that do read the legals. And on occasion, when something is not correct, I have gone to the local unit of government as a FYI. I thank the testifiers. Chris Schultz is one of my constituents. And in my district, there are 5 newspapers. And yes, I subscribe to all 5 newspapers. And yes, I do read all 5 newspapers. I just want to mention something. So over the past few weeks, all of us have probably had either superintendents or school board members come and visit with us about the many, many concerns that are happening with schools, and there's no doubt that there are. But I just want to mention that when the schools that came to visit me, their main concerns are local control and funding. Those were probably the two biggest issues that that they are bringing forward. And I just want to mention that. But I do appreciate, again, listening to this bill. I appreciate that this is bipartisan. And, yes, it has been a years-long work to get this done. And I just thank you for the time that you have given me on this bill.
Thank you. And with that, I will renew my motion that House File 2231 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the General Register. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The motion passes, and you're on your way. Thank you. There was House File 2013 had been removed from the agenda, so that brings us to the end of our regular agenda. I didn't know if Co-Chair Freiberg had any general discussions, because we're getting down to our last few meetings.
We posted the agenda of the bills that are getting heard on Wednesday, so I think those are out there, and yeah, we'll, I guess, see how that goes and then determine what to do for next week.
Well, thank you. Any other members got questions, queries, comments, bad dad jokes? Representative McDonald.
No, I have really good jokes, but we'll do it offline.
Thank you. Seeing no other, we are adjourned.